Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. So Barry Trotz held a press conference yesterday. Robbie Stanley was there. He tweeted out the highlights. He texted us the Cliff Notes. We read them on air yesterday. And there was one thing in there about Soros being unfairly criticized that Robbie had pointed out. And we saw what the quote said. But, you know, what's the context of it, so on and so forth, who knows? And Jake and I were discussing yesterday, like, you know, is that comment about Soros being unfairly criticized, is that pointed in my direction? So Barry Trotz, who spent most of his press conference talking about fixing the defense, veered off, as he is one to do, in his press conference, and said that he fixed the defense to give Soros a chance. Here's the cut. Here's the context. Here's what Barry said.
The big thing for me was the trade that we did the other day. That one feels absolutely right for where we want to go with this team. And then I think Nick is a really value one. Our scouts do a really good job of finding those value guys where you want to get them before they pop. So I think they've done a really good job. So. And then we've got lots of good players. I mean, having Roman Josi, for a healthy Roman Josi back in on the defense that we currently have, and the depth that we have there, I think we're going to be really, really good. And that'll make Soros' life a lot better too, because last year there was times it was very unfair for him, and he took a lot of heat for it unnecessarily.
Okay, that probably is about me. Again, not like, Jared Stillman's on the radio yelling and screaming, but the fact that we talk to Trotz every week and it was, the goalie stinks. I'm sure he had heard enough of that. When you come on the show every week and that question gets asked, I'm sure you're like, okay. And he kept saying the same things all the time about how, well, it's the defense in front of him, it's not him, to which I'd say, well, if the defense in front of him matters so much, then why did you have to give him an 8-year contract with a full no movement clause? Is he that important if he himself cannot carry you to victory? But that's not the crux of what I want to get into, and I don't care if this is about me or not. The issue to me is the fact that when it comes to UC Soros and the Predators, for whatever reason, the Nashville Predators never, ever, ever blame UC Soros for anything. Whether it is Trotz, whether it is the coach, whether it is Willie and Chris, nobody over there ever, 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 ever gets mad at UC Soros when they don't win or when the goalie does not play well. So here's the question I want to know. What is the standard of accountability that we should hold UC Soros to, or should be allowed to hold UC Soros to? Because last year, UC Soros was terrible by almost every single metric. And Barry Trotz is telling us it wasn't his fault. He got so much criticism, and it was unfair criticism, even though before the season, we had our doubts about UC Soros. So again, what is UC Soros accountable for? Is it winning? Because last year, he lost 37 times in net. He was 20, 31, and 6. Well, it was a bad team around him, Jared. Okay, what about his individual save percentage? Does that matter? Because last year it was 895. His career is 914, and when you are sub-9, you stink. Well, that was last year, Jared. Last year doesn't matter. In the last 2 years, so not just last year, but the year before, UC Soros has had 23 RBSs, which are really bad starts. That's when you get run out of a game when you're not very good. UC Soros had 11 2 years ago and 12 last year. So that's more than just 1 year. Last year, his goals saved above average, according to HockeyReference.com, was negative 7.6, meaning he allowed in an extra 8 goals, because the stat, goals saved above average, are the amount of goals that the goalie prevented given his team's save percentage and shots faced versus the league average save percentage on the same number of shots. Again, minus 7.6. So all the stats say that last year UC Soros was bad. And the really bad starts was an issue the year before that as well. But we're told it's not his fault. Can't blame him. Well, what about the fact that he's 5-11 in the playoffs? What about the fact that he had a sub-9 save percentage in the four-game bubble series against Arizona? What about the fact that he was awful in the Four Nations and got pulled and got benched? Was that his fault? Or was that Nick Blankenberg and Justin Barron's fault too, even though they weren't on that Four Nations team? Is the fact that he's never won a playoff series in 5 years of being the Predators' starting goalie, is that not his fault? So here's the question I have for Trotz. Here's the question I have for Willie Donick. Here's the question I have for Chris Mason. Here's the question I have for every single one of you Soros defenders out there who apparently can never do any wrong and it's never his fault. When is it his fault? Will it be his fault this year? You tell me. They made one change on defense last year. They sent Ryan McDonough to Tampa Bay, and they brought in Brady Shea. Other than that, Yossi, Lazan, Carrier, Fabro, all those guys were the same from the year before. From that team that made the playoffs and lost to Vancouver, and the loss to Vancouver, that wasn't his fault. Remember, can't blame Soros. And I know Ryan McDonough is a solid player. He's not that good. That one change changes absolutely everything. And we always talk about the 0-5 start that the Predators got off to last year. And again, I do believe that the 0-5 start did hurt them. But where was UC Soros during the 0-5 start? Didn't play the first game of the season. He got hurt, so that one doesn't count because he couldn't show up for the first game of the year. Then, in his first start against Detroit, he gave up 3 goals. Really 2. Then at 0-2, all right, 0-2, didn't win the Dallas game. That was a tough one because Stamkos hit the post with about 5 seconds left. And, you know, Soros played okay against Detroit. In game 3, gotta have it, crappy Seattle at home. Soros, 6 goals allowed on 34 shots, 8.24 save percentage. So the opportunity to win game 3 and give your team a 1-2 record, and again, at 1-2, it's not the end of the world. Nothing. They lose to Edmonton because McDavid did McDavid things, and then they play Detroit. Can't go to 0-5. How did Soros do in that game? 3 goals on 22 shots and 8.64 save percentage. But again, according to the Predators and everybody related to the Predators, it's not his fault. Not his fault that they started off 0-5, even though he wasn't able to play the first game. And he had a sub-9 save percentage in 2 of his first 4 performances that contributed to the 0-5 start. All of his stats were awful. Hasn't won a playoff series. 5-11 in the playoffs, and yet it's never, ever, ever his fault. So when can I blame him, Barry? When can I blame him, Willie? When can I blame him, Chris Mason? And I am just so sick and tired of how it is never UC Soros' fault. I'm told this guy is Pekka Rinne 2.0. And yet, when they win games and they get close, he gets all the credit. They lost to Carolina in a series in which it went 6 games, and it was a very competitive series, even though Carolina was clearly the better team in 2021. And Soros was very good in net, and it was like, but hey, Soros was very good in that Carolina series, so he gets all the credit, even when they don't win, but he gets none of the blame. And yesterday, Barry Trotz, again, well, you know, we really fixed our defense because our defense last year wasn't good. And with Yossi back there, it'll give Soros a chance because last year Soros was criticized too much and it wasn't fair. It's never his fault. Never, ever, 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 ever. That's why this team can absolutely, positively not live without him. So here's what I'm going to say. Let's just all be fair. Let's all make a deal. The Boohoo Soros crew and all of us who can watch the game objectively, let's make a deal. This year, now that his 8-year contract is kicked in, now that his no movement clause is kicked in, so even if he still sucks, there's nothing they can do about it. This year, with the additions they've made on defense, if he's not any good, then you have to admit he sucks. Barry, you have to blame him. If his stats are sub 9 save percentages this year, you have to blame him. Willie, Chris, Hal, if he loses 37 games again, you have to blame him. Because, again, it'd be one thing if they lost a game and Soros played great, or they lost a series and Soros played great, and you said, yeah, you know, Soros really gave it everything he had, but the team wasn't good enough, and you can't put that one on Soros. But instead, it's every criticism. Can't put that on Soros. Can't put that on Soros. Certainly can't put that on Soros. I mean, well, how could you ever put that on Soros? Can't blame Soros for the Arizona bubble series. Can't blame Soros for the Carolina series they didn't win. Can't blame Soros because he was hurt in the Colorado series. Can't blame Soros for the fact that they ended up somehow last year losing the Vancouver series when they had leads in all these games, and then they crapped their pants for a 20-second segment, and they end up losing those games. Can't blame Soros for that. Can't blame Soros for all the losing last year. Can't blame Soros for anything. So this year, this is the year where Soros has to prove that he's actually good. And the benefit of the doubt is gone. And I will not stand for anybody telling me this year when they lose, if they lose, if he's got a sub-9 save percentage, if he's got more RBSs, really bad starts, if his goals above average, or whatever the hell it is, goals saved above average, is in the negative again, I'm not going to listen to anybody take up for Soros, because I'm sick and tired of it. He was unfairly criticized last year. How about you win a game? If you're so good that I have to give you a no movement clause and have to tie my hands to you, I have to tether my entire operation to you, shouldn't you be responsible for helping me win? 615-737-1025, which is the phone number, 615-737-1025. So when teams make moves, a lot of the times if they go against the grain, people say, what are they thinking? And sometimes these general managers see things you don't, and they are geniuses. And other times, they're reckless. Well, there's a move Barry Trotz has made that Barry Trotz is convinced it's going to work. We'll get to that in your phones next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
We set up with a couple goals, and I think we really concentrated on really fixing our defense, sort of now and into the future. We needed to we got some great prospects on the way, but I felt that two things: we wanted to get bigger, and we wanted to get younger. We have some of those great young puck-moving guys coming, so it takes longer for those big bodies to have success. You look at some of the great players, in the past, and more when I coached, probably like the Prongers and the Hatchers of the world. It just took longer, and so sometimes you're waiting for those guys. So, the deal we made with Vegas was that with that in mind, you're getting a 6-foot. Six defenseman who we project is going to be in the top four. He's going to play high minutes. And if you look even in the playoffs last year against Edmonton and And I think it was game seven. He got a lot of minutes against those top guys. I mean, we're talking the best, maybe the best two forwards in the league. So we just feel he's one of those players that is going to make a difference in the right age category for us as a hockey team.
Okay, that was Barry Trotz yesterday. Boy, he loves himself some Nick Hague. I mean, he loves Nick Hague. And I don't want to be negative about this because, again, when it comes to loving guys and every general manager, every coach, every spectator, every radio host has guys they just freaking love. For me, it is, for years, it has been Rickard Rakell. You know, that top line forward who used to play in Anaheim and then he was in St. Louis in Pittsburgh for a little bit. Now, he's too old now, but God, I loved Rickard Rakell. And I think when James Neal cheap shotted him in the Western Conference Finals in 2017, that was a big moment where it kind of swung power in your direction, even though Preds fans don't want to talk about it. Barry Trotz loves Nick Hague. The analytics community, the Adam Dingens of the world, they do not like Nick Hague. They have crapped all over this contract. And Barry Trotz is like, no, no, no. I'm telling you, this guy, he's legit. The one thing, though, that it does kind of remind me of is last year, Justin Barron, when they traded Carrier for Barron, and Barry came on the show and was like, Barron is a guy who I have liked for a long time. He was a former first-round pick, and I asked him, I said, would you have made this move last year at the deadline when Carrier was a pending unrestricted free agent if you had been offered Barron? He said, yes. I watched Barron play last year. He sucked. Like, he stunk. Now, maybe there's a chance that playing third pair minutes and being a right shot with a consistent partner, if they can make that happen this year, we'll give Barron a shot. But he stunk. He was awful. And that was the guy Barry went all Jerry Jones, I want him. I want him. And he was awful. But again, my big beef is Barry said yesterday, UC Soros, too much unfair criticism. And I just go back to, when am I allowed to blame UC Soros? Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. David in Murfreesboro. Soros is the most polled starting goalie in the NHL and has been for 2 years in a row. Not his fault. Not his fault, David in Murfreesboro. Matthew from Jolton says, Ryan McDonagh is one of the best lockdown defensemen of all time, but he's not that good. Again, if you think that Ryan McDonagh is so important as to why your defense completely went in the garbage can last year, then what are you doing giving Soros a big contract? Shouldn't you have given Ryan McDonagh a bigger contract when he came to you and said, hey, I think I'd like to go back to Tampa? Could you have said, hey, let's sweeten the pot for you? Now, I don't know his contract situation, so you have to wait until he's in the last year of his deal. But if McDonagh is that important to Soros' success, shouldn't McDonagh have been the guy who I was moving heaven and earth to make happy and not Soros? Nope. Got to give Soros the 8-year contract. Got to give Soros the full no movement clause because I got to kick out the younger goalie because God forbid we ask UC Soros to actually do something. That's unfair. Can't do that. You can't ask him to be good. What's the matter with you? And that is something that bothers me a little bit. Adam in Portland says, I've never understood it. Soros is what you get when you force Billy Volek to be your quarterback when you know he isn't the guy. We all thought he would be, but when Floyd saw that Billy Volek wasn't, he moved on, even though it sucked for them to move on from Billy Volek. I don't think that's really what happened with Billy Volek. I don't think the comparison to Billy Volek is fair, but I do think that UC Soros is absolutely a probably league average goalie. And because of his size and his age, he's probably going to decline faster than some of the other goalies, but I don't think he's like a franchise quarterback. I think he's one of these guys like Tua, who we laugh at when the other team commits to these guys because you're never going to win with him as your starting goalie. You're never going to win with him as your starting quarterback. That's what I think he is. I do not think that he is Pekka, who, again, was a franchise goalie for this team. I wouldn't have given Pekka a statue outside the building. That's just me. And I love Pekka. I wouldn't have given Pekka a statue because I got a little bit higher standards. I would have retired his number. But Soros is not Pekka. And I do think that the Predators have decided Soros is Pekka because that's what they want to believe. It's like the Green Bay Packers gave Jordan Love a $55 million contract for having five good games at the end of a season. And I'm not saying Jordan Love's not good, but they think he's Aaron Rodgers because we went from Brett to Aaron, and now we're going from Aaron to Jordan. And it's like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, like, that's a pretty high bar to pass. And Soros is not that guy. But everybody over there, they've told themselves he is absolutely that guy. This time last year, when we were arguing the merits of a Soros contract or not, Willie kept talking about, well, Pekka took a while to pop, and Pekka this and Pekka that. It's like, bro, he ain't Pekka. One texter says, is it possible the teams took the Predators more seriously early on because of the signings, and when the Preds figured it out some, the Preds didn't actually want to win because the season was lost? No, it is not. Joey from Bellevue says, Trotz is covering up a bad decision he made when he signed Soros to the 8-year deal. Trotz will never say, hey, I screwed up, and goodness, I'll be in my 50 when this deal expires. Why pay someone $8 million that's so dependent on everyone else around him? And why give him a full no move? The thing that gets me is that my son is going to be 9 years old when this contract is up. Now, what's kind of crazy is these deals end faster than you think. Like, when they start off, it's like, man, 8 years is so long. The Ryan Johansson contract expired after this year. And I remember when that 8-year deal was signed, and I remember a couple years into that thinking, oh, my God, this contract is never, ever, ever going to end. And it actually has ended. So I guess what I'm saying is my son will be 9 before I know it. But I haven't seen anything that makes me think Soros is going to be good enough to be your goalie in 8 years. And apparently they have. And all the bad stuff that we've seen, they say don't count. It doesn't count. Doesn't count. Willie and Chris Mason, nope, doesn't count. Not fair. Not fair to blame Soros for all of his terrible stats last year. One texter said, Jared is right on. Soros' stats are down 3 straight years. Some of it is not his fault. The league is getting better, and they've learned to shoot high on Soros. But the reason that most goalies are 6'5" and not 5'8", no GM signs those stats and heights to 8 years. Caleb says, tired of hearing all about these great young players. If they are that good, they would be on the team contributing and not in Milwaukee. I want to say, like, it's going to take these guys some time to be ready to go. Like, it's going to take them some time. You got to be fair. It's going to take them some time. So that I'm okay with. Again, being fair. 615-737-1025. A lot of you want to weigh in. 615-737-1025. I do have one big Predators good take. I think that's the way I'll say it. A good take to get to. Which I'm kind of shocked by, and I'm a little wrong, and oh, kind of an apology to David Poyle, of all people. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. It's Stillman & Company on 1025 The Game.
How many goals do you think Tanner Janot had last year?
I have no idea.
Just ballpark it.
Not a Tanner Janot guy.
How many goals do you think a guy who gets a 5-year deal?
4. He had 4 goals.
No, he had 7.
See? Yeah, but probably more assists.
Overachieving.
Upside. Yeah.
Oh, how many assists do you think you had last year?
Probably more than 7, right?
No, he had 6.
Oh.
13 points. You're giving a 5-year deal to a guy with 13 points who's 28 years old. What are you doing? What is the direction? Don Sweeney last week goes, we're not going to gift our young players any opportunities. No, we're going to box them out with 5-year deals now instead. That's what you do. The boner that they have for the power forward. Tanner Janot's last 2 seasons. 14 goals.
Consistent.
14 goals in 120 games.
7 months.
You're getting a goal every 10 games. You got to give 5 years for that?
Getting. You know what you're getting.
At least he's been good in the playoffs. Oh, wait. He has 0 goals in 16 career playoff games.
Again, we're not going to be there. Yeah. So what's
the
point?
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs. They don't have to worry about those
numbers. Why are you worried about that?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Why would you do that? You traded Trent Frederick, and everyone was going, that's a great deal. You want to pay that guy. You don't want to give that guy a lot of term. So they go in and give that term to a worse player, essentially.
That was Ty Anderson on 98.5 The Sports Hub. He covers the Bruins and was just losing his mind yesterday at the five-year deal that the Boston Bruins gave Tanner Jeannot. 5 years. And by the way, listening to all those stats, you know, he's 7 goals a season and he doesn't score in the playoffs. And it took me back to the 2-year period where Tanner Jeannot came up because the Predators were running out of guys during that 2021 COVID season. They were running out of guys. They called up Jeannot. Jeannot had a nice couple of games, stood in the lineup, and they protected him over Cali Yarncroke. And I couldn't believe it because one guy was a legitimate NHL player and the other was a Scarbini who had a nice little run. And David Poile, if you remember, said to me, well, with all due respect, I know more than you. When I said, why would you not protect Cali Yarncroke? Why would you protect Tanner Jeannot? Well, David Poile, I owe you an apology, sir. And I want everybody to know this. Because for whatever reason, Tanner Jeannot went off the next year and scored 20-something goals. And every time he scored a goal, my Twitter blew up. You hated Tanner Jeannot, Jared. You said he was a Scarbini. You said he was a Milwaukee guy. You said he was a... And I'm like, he is. He's got no skill. He's got no skill. He's got no talent. He's just a big oaf. That's it. But he scored 20-something goals. And every time he scored, you people. They didn't win with Jeannot, but again, he had that nice year. Then he wasn't doing so hot. And then they traded him to Tampa Bay. And I could not believe what Tampa Bay gave back in exchange for Tanner Jeannot. I think I can say this now because enough time has passed. But when the Predators traded Tanner Jeannot, they were trying to work out an extension with him. And Tanner Jeannot wanted Tom Wilson money. That's the kind of player he thought he was. He wanted Tom Wilson money, and the Predators said goodbye. And they shipped him to Tampa, who didn't win anything with him. And now that's all done. His contract is done. He's no longer in Tampa. He's no longer in L.A. The contract's got a 5-year deal in Boston. The people in Boston can't believe it because Tanner Jeannot stinks. And I don't know how David Poile pulled off the Tanner Jeannot trade that he did. I do not know how he did it because they made a lot of bad trades over the years. This one, A++++. Here's what the Predators received in exchange for Tanner Jeannot. Number one, Cameron Reed, the second first-round pick this year, a defenseman that all the gurus seem to absolutely love. And I'm going to guess, as far as Preds prospects are concerned, Cameron Reed, now he won't be here for a little bit, but Cameron Reed is probably somewhere between number 2 and number 4. Brady Martin's the number one prospect on the team. And then there's Mullendike, Wood, and I'm guessing Cam Reed is in the same group with Mullendike and Wood and probably ahead of everybody else. Number 2, Andrew Gibson, who midseason was ranked the 11th best Predators prospect and a right shot defenseman who Barry Trotz absolutely loves. And I believe, again, I don't, you know, the gurus don't seem to love Andrew Gibson as much as Trotz does, but I think they envision Andrew Gibson being their first pair right shot defenseman next to Tanner Mullendike in the future. Felix Nilsson, who's a center, who's very, very young, who is their 10th best prospect, or was their 10th best prospect midseason. And Jacob Melota, who's some goalie prospect, who knows if he's any good or not. What have I always said? When it comes to prospects, every 5 prospects you have, you are likely to get 1 or 2 NHL players from those 5 prospects. So between Cameron Reed and Andrew Gibson and Felix Nilsson and Jacob Melota, they should probably get 1 player. Like, that's probably what they should end up getting. That's so much better than Tanner Jeannot. If one of these two guys, Cam Reed or Andrew Gibson, becomes a first or second pair defenseman, like a Matthias Ekholm type, that is 10 times more valuable than Tanner Jeannot. If both guys become top four defensemen? That's a million times more valuable than Tanner Janot. So I have to give David Poile his due now that the Janot deal is done. And there were a lot of mistakes David Poile made that I was very vocal about. And I got on his ass for not retaining Callie Yarncroak, who's, you know, he's fine. But holy crap, what a fleece job. And how stupid is Boston? 5-year deal for Tanner Janot? Holy crap. So how does that make everybody feel? I've been very down on the Predators, but I did like going back to the Janot trade, especially when everybody tells you how good Cam Reed is. Because if Cam Reed is any good, if he's a top pair defenseman, you traded Tanner Janot for two of your three best defensive prospects? Joel says the Saros contract is really a no move for 6 years. The last two are limited movement. The 7.75 will not hurt as much given the cap will go up. As a Predators fan, you better hope you're wrong and he gets back to something close like 21 or 2022 form. If not, they better hope the goalie they took in the second round ends up becoming that guy, because they're going to need a goalie who's not making a lot of money to be able to be their number one goalie if Saros is what he was last year. That is an issue with how much they love Saros and how much most of us don't. One texter says, you said it before that all you need to win a cup is an okay goalie, and UC Saros is an okay goalie. That is true. But at the same time, I don't need to give him a no-move clause, and I don't need to give him $8 million. I think you can win with Anthony Stolarz as your goalie, and he makes $2.5 million. One texter says, Saros will be gone in 3 years, trade or buyout, and he's like Marcus Mariota. Great person and a great teammate, but the ceiling is not high. If the Titans had gone all in on Mariota, they would have had to give him an incredible offensive line just to give him a chance. And Saros needs these big blue liners in order to give himself a chance. One texter says, all of the UC Saros stuff makes me feel like the Preds are starting to sound like the Titans. I just hate how, again, every time that Saros doesn't play well or the goalie stats are awful, it's an easy finger point and every, oh, no, 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 no. That is not fair. No, no, no. Can't blame Saros. 615-737-1025, Stillman & Company, 1025-1063. The game will give away something on the other side. Right here, 1025-1063. Stillman & Company, I am a man of my word. So let's give something away. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025, and you'll win tickets to Live plus Collective Soul at First Bank Amphitheater on Sunday, August 10th. So I had to laugh out loud today. Jim Wyatt in his Titans mailbag was asked from Jeremy from Winchester, California, about Simmons and Sweat and how they've looked in camp so far. Was Sweat able to drop a little bit of weight? Jim Wyatt says, hey, Jeremy. Jeffrey looked great when he reported to minicamp, and Sweat looked just okay to me this offseason. I didn't notice a big difference in his weight when he reported back for the start of the offseason, but I think he has lost some weight since. He now has about 3 to 4 weeks to get himself into peak condition to be ready for camp. That was written on Titan Stationery. Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders joins us now on the program. Chris, we start there. Want to start negative? Your reaction to Jim Wyatt on Tavondre Sweat, he looked okay. Didn't notice a big difference in his weight, but he thinks he maybe has lost some weight since. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, but see, you're trying to start out. I'm not saying negative because I know you got to say it, but here's the thing, man. If I'm a professional and I know I got to come in shape and I know that a team is depending on you, I wouldn't use the last 4 weeks to get in shape. I mean, if I'm one of the guys that's supposed to be a pivotal part of your defense and they're writing an article that you looked okay, that you looked like you lost a couple of pounds, that's not going to fly. I mean, you got drafted in the second round. You got drafted to be a dominant player. You got drafted to come in here and make this defense better. And they're talking about that you look okay. You may have lost one or two pounds. That's not going to get it, man. I'm just misunderstanding. That's not going to get it.
Plus, when Jim Wyatt is saying that he looked just okay, and maybe he's lost some weight since, and he's got 3 to 4 weeks to get in shape, isn't that kind of a sign to you that he's not in shape?
Yeah, he's not in shape. Listen, you don't get in shape just 3 or 4 weeks before the season starts. That doesn't happen. You get in shape when you start preparing. It's a process. You don't have a process to just get in shape for 4 weeks. You don't do that because everybody's different. Everybody prepares different. I understand that. But if I'm coming in and I'm just using the last 4 weeks to get in shape, that's not going to happen because you got to prepare like 3 and 4 weeks. Two and 3 months before that.
Somebody once told me that there was this really fat defensive lineman for the Packers. I forget who it was. It might have been the guy that picked up Mariota that one time and threw him down. But really, fat defensive tackle for the Packers. Right. And this guy, every year after the season, he just would gain a bunch of weight and not do anything. But in July, he'd go to like a fat camp, you know, like a Club Med kind of thing. He'd go there. And when he would go to that fat camp, he'd lose the weight to get in shape. Do you think that if Tavondre Sweat were to go to a fat camp that he could get in shape and be ready to go?
I mean, he could, but here's the thing. You got to understand, it's not just, okay, using camp or whatever you need to get in shape. Now, you got to understand, there's a difference between being in shape and being in football shape. You got to be in football shape because you got to understand each play lasts 7 seconds. You got to be able to be explosive on every single play. So when you talk about being in shape, it's not just being in shape to make your gasser test. That's not it. It's about being in shape, playing 40 and 50 snaps a game. And that's what you have to do because if he gets in the regular season and that joker comes out and all of a sudden he's out of shape and then he's got to get in shape and then he's going to get injuries and you don't want to have that with your second year.
Chris Sanders is with us on the program. So L'Jarius Sneed held a camp and he said at the camp that he's the healthiest he's been in a while. He's totally healthy. He's totally ready to go. Same time, PK is reporting that he might be opening up camp on the PUP list. So who do you believe?
Sneed. Oh, yeah.
So who do you believe? L'Jarius Sneed, who says he's okay, or Paul Kaharski, who is reporting that he might open up on the PUP list?
I hate to say this, but I might have to believe Paul Kaharski. And the reason why I say it is because if you look at Sneed's track record for the last year, I'm just saying for the last year, I know before when he was with the Kansas City Chiefs, he was pretty healthy. But if you look at last year, I mean, he missed a lot of football. He missed a lot of practice. He made a lot lost. I mean, a lot of just losing, you know, time on the football field. But then now you have a situation. Then it comes out that maybe it's his hip, maybe it's his knee. So now he's back in the backseat again. So a reason why I believe Paul Kaharski is just a track record of the last year that he hasn't been available.
Chris, do you think when it comes to Sneed, every time it feels like anything surrounding his knee is G14 classified and we aren't, you know, told anything about it. Oh, no, it's fine. He'll be fine. Oh, he's doing great. Oh, he's fine. And then he never plays and there's all this drama and then there's all the off the field stuff. Yeah. Don't you think at this point they're just better off without L'Jarius Sneed?
I mean, I just think that it's starting to become a distraction. When I say a distraction, because now when he shows up for camps and if he comes to camp, the first thing they're going to talk about is what happened with the case. What's going on with that situation? Is he going to be suspended? And then also they talk about, is it your knee or is it your hip or whatever it is? Now it's starting to become, as opposed to thinking about football and thinking about the Tennessee Titans, now it becomes a distraction of the off-the-field stuff. So I just think that this organization has to sit down and take a long look of, do they want to go forward with this guy? Because if you look at the secondary is my biggest concern. So they need to figure it out really, really quickly. Do they want to find somebody else or actually go with Sneed?
What do you want to do?
Oh, man. I mean,
remember what you said last year during the year when you said, I think if this team didn't stink, Sneed would be playing. You can't have people like that on your team, Chris. Yeah.
I mean, I know that, but it's just that you when you're in this league, you want to make sure you're available. And I think with the last year, Sneed just wasn't available. I mean, when he played okay. He played decent. I mean, if you look at this Tennessee Titans team, if they can get some guys in the secondary that can help this front, because I think the front is going to be okay if Jeffrey Simmons is there and Sweat is at the top of his game, I think they can be pretty good. But the back end, you need some help in the back end. I know you got Brownlee that's there. Yes, he's okay. But with him being there, I think it helps your defense. But I think that if it's all this distraction and stuff that's going on, I don't know if you want to cut ties or not.
Chris, 3 weeks from today, the Titans will be in training camp on the football field. So I ask you this question as a former player. Sure. When you got to July 4th, where physically were you, where mentally were you getting ready for the start of camp and everything that would come with it? And where should the players be right now?
You know what? That's a great question, Jared. Man, I was chomping at the bit. I mean, you know, you go through OTAs, you go through all these other things away from, I mean, when you're doing football, but when you actually get in camp, those those are the things you want to be. So when I came there July 4th, I was ready to go because I prepared 2 and 3 months before. So if we had camp July 5th, I knew I was ready. So now you have the next generation of Tennessee Titans that are coming out. They have to be ready. You can't hear things that you know, the sweat is coming in with, you know, he might lose pounds. I mean, if you're a professional, you shouldn't even have these sorry questions. Because you're talking about winning. You're talking about, you know, being one of the best in the league. You want to talk about dominating. Dominating is just not dominating in one play. It's dominating the process when you're working out, the process when you're lifting weight, the process of when you get an OTA, the process when you're in camp. That's what it means if you're a professional. And I think if you're going to be a Tennessee Titan and the expectation is to win, you have to do those things to be having a winning attitude.
Chris Sanders, as always, on our program. Chris, great stuff. Enjoy the summer. We will talk soon.
Appreciate you, brother. Love you, man.
Yep, love you, Chris Sanders, as always. Boy, Chris was kind of hard on Sweat and Snead, eh? I was a little surprised by that. And so we shall see if Snead can get, or Sweat can get himself into shape, or if he's in shape or whatever. I think Sweat's just one of those guys. Luka Doncic is this way. Danielle Adams, who played in the WNBA for a little bit, she won a national championship. She took down, like, the UConn back in the day. She won a national championship at Texas A&M, and she was fat. And Babe Ruth was this way. I think Sweat's just one of these guys who, like, he's always going to be fat. Like, we really want him to focus and get him in tip-top shape. He's never going to. Now, he's got a motor, so he's going to be like Luka. He's still going to be able to play, but I think that's just how he's going to be. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in on the program. 615-737-1025. There is something in college football that is so, in my opinion, intellectually dishonest. It is driving me insane. And yet, I'm not sure anybody else can see it. And they're telling us exactly what they're doing. We'll get to that next. Dominic Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.